three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Joseph Core is my name from Stats Perform Media. I'm joined by Andrew Kenyon.
The man, the fan in the street. The old man now. We were just talking how old I am. Oh, geez. I'm not mentioning it now on the podcast, but
it was Andrew's birthday yesterday. Yeah, it was Andrew's birthday yesterday. So happy birthday to Andrew, to you, and
everyone
else there, I'm sure. I'm just up top of the program. We kind of forgot it last time. Yeah, what was our slogan? The fan, man, the street, the sports media, media. I quite like that, but I
think it's good. I haven't heard a better one. So I think we might need to ramp it up.
What are we selling? Patreon. If you like the show, do jump on Patreon. No more copies of Marvelous, but if you're desperate for a copy, get in touch with me. I can try. Booktopia. I bought a book the other day through my own link, which is kind of weird. It's like doubling over on yourself. But I bought a book called The Wild Truth by Corinne McCandless, sister of Chris McCandless, who was the subject of that amazing book and film called Into the Wild, The Wild Truth. So I bought that. So you can use the link to buy any book you want, and it helps the show. So do indeed. Andrew, anything you want to say at the top that's like businessy?
Can I promote a book? Yes. I want to promote a book that isn't through – I tried to buy it through Patreon. I mean, not Patreon. What am I saying? I'm thinking about Booktopia. The next thing. I tried to buy it through Booktopia, but unfortunately it wasn't available. But we're getting no kickback from this promotion, but I want to just put it out there anyway. It's Chris Anstey's new book, Tall Tales. I bought a copy from his website, so chrisanstey.com.au.
Yeah, do it through that. Chris Anstey's book, buy from him. I'm sure he gets greater dividends that way. Don't go through Amazon. Don't go through Booktopia as much as they're good to us. Go straight through him.
Yeah.
Because you get a signed copy.
Will I? I don't know if I will. But anyway, I bought a copy. I expect it to arrive soon. I'm looking forward to reading that one.
Oh, actually, this all reminds me. I'm speaking to a guest tomorrow morning or Wednesday afternoon, Mountain Time. Paul Shirley is coming back on. We're going to talk about his new book, Ball Boy. Ball Boy, which he just wrote and which I just read. We're going to be talking about that at length, about how he wrote it and everything. So one of the guests I really want to do get is Anstey, because of the Paul Shirley connection, the book writing connection. So if Chris Anstey listens, which is highly unlikely, get in touch with us. But more importantly, today's show.
I tweeted with Chris Anstey the other day, so he and I were connected now, you know.
No doubt. You can ask him. what I'll say is, this episode, we're going to do another quick fire one, or hope to. We're talking about game three that happened just last night. We're talking about the fan in Perth. That's been pretty popular. Looking at the first and second teams. First and second teams of the NBL Awards, which are on tonight. And then obviously the grand final. Doing a preview of that. And then we've got a Twitter question or statement. So we're going to go through that. Andrew Kenyon.
Yes.
What do you want to start? Do you want to start with game three?
Yes, let's do the game three. We haven't done either game three, have we?
Yeah, we did Wildcats.
Did we? Did we do game three?
Yeah, remember we talked about did we?
No, I don't think we did, man. I don't think we've talked about it. I think we were looking at the preview. Really? We made a preview. We predicted it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, let's talk about
time flies.
more amnesia with old age, I think. But let's go. Do you want to talk about let's talk about the Perth game three then?
Yeah. Let's get that done.
Get out of the one. Where'd you see it? How'd you see it?
It was an enjoyable game. I liked it. Obviously, you know, I'm from Perth, and you know, I try and be impartial as I can on this show, but I'm still ultimately a Wildcats fan, and I have to admit it. Mm-hmm. Declare that allegiance. So I obviously enjoyed the result. I liked the whole game though. I liked the back and forth. I like the Wildcats getting a lead, looking like they were going to put it away, but then the Hawks mounting another bit of a push. I liked the Luke Travers situation. Bit of a shaky game, but really brought it home. And I love Mitch Norton stepping up, playing so hard. And then on the Hawks, I love the fact that they didn't die wondering. Frohling just absolutely monstered. Jessup did his best from time to time. Tyler Harvey was the big story, though. Non-performer.
Wow. The four fouls. I mean, I was ready to jump through the screen. I was like, Gorgon, what are you playing at? Why would you take such a massive risk when he picked up that fourth before halftime? I couldn't believe it, I was watching. Yeah. I knew the game was over then. I never thought that Illawarra had a chance. Their chance was game two. It was over. Even when it got close, I was like, nah, not enough firepower, not going to do it. And I thought the Wildcats came through. What was I going to say as well about this? Oh, I was actually a little underwhelmed by Gleeson in this game because obviously Harvey picked up that fourth foul and then Gorgon was like, nope, we're still going to play him through the third. And I thought Gorgon should have stepped away from the flex and gone, attack Harvey. Let's get him off the floor. Because once he left the floor, the game was over. And it never happened. Sure. He stayed on the court the whole
no,
game.
No, it didn't.
So
it didn't.
I saw a little bit of ego. I saw a little bit of hubris, perhaps, from Trevor Gleeson. And I didn't like it. I was like, oh, I would have stepped outside the offense. Bobby Fischer, I don't believe in psychology. I believe in good moves. And I thought the good move at that time was to step away from what you normally do and attack him and get him to foul up.
That's what I can't argue with that. Cannot argue with that. I'll just make a call. I don't know if you can pick up any background noise in the recording at the moment. Sorry about that.
Is that a vacuum?
Going on outside and stuff. It is a vacuum. Right, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the house, so I apologize.
I'll try and clean it up in post, but no, that's no issue. So that was game three of that Wildcats game. Let's move on to the Southeast Melbourne-Melbourne game. What happened? Why didn't Southeast Melbourne win this game, Andrew Kane?
Well, they stopped defending in the second half.
Can I ask this question? Actually,
they stopped scoring the ball.
Did they choke? We've thrown around that word a couple of times, but this did they choke away this game?
I don't think so. I think they got monstered by Landale, which has been a common story for them. Whenever there's a powerful big man on the opponent, they struggle. So that happened again, and they ran an absolutely terrible offense. Mm. Like it was.
Oh, they ran one.
It wasn't even an offense. Yeah, that's right. It was point guard dribble the ball, over dribble the ball. We needed Connor Henry, actually, you know, with his over dribbling. That's what they needed.
I couldn't believe it.
You're over dribbling. Kyle, you're over dribbling.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And getting late in the shot clock. Well, every time that Turungi had a good statistical game, I didn't think he played well at all because every time he caught the ball, the next time he gave it up, there was 8 seconds left on the shot clock. Too late. Mm. Too late. And not giving it up to someone in the paint to make a catch and go or whatever. Literally relinquishing the ball at quarter court. I thought, and so many guys for Southeast Melbourne did that where they just were so they were scared. When did you see Brokoff attack the paint with energy to free up his shot later in the game? When did you see Glidden do the same? Turungi left points on the hole. Turungi had a good statistical game, but honestly, he hit all these threes when they were leaving him wide open in garbage time. I'd already almost turned the game off at that point. I was like, oh, whatever points are scored from here on don't matter. And that's where Turungi got four or five threes wide open by design from Melbourne.
And it didn't matter because every time then Melbourne would come down the other end and Goulding would hit a three or, you know, it was just answered every time. So it was kind of irrelevant. Mm. The thing that frustrates me about that is you watching their offense, if you want to call it that, they just sit Brokoff or Glidden or whoever in the corner, right? It's like an NBA style offense, like put the guy in the corner, but the kickouts never go there. Every time they ran their offense, they initiate the offense from the opposite corner of that shooter. They never get involved. So it's like you've just got this NBA level shooter who's getting nothing. You've got Glidden who's like, well, he's sort of the next best.
He can hit shots. He can shoot 40% from the outside. There's no doubt about that. I don't think he's a particularly – he's not an NBL first, second teamer. He's not that – he's not even in the top half players in the league, but he can hit shots, no doubt about it. Open ones, for sure.
But he will never even get your hands on the ball. So you can't score if you don't touch the ball. Now, and then on the to their criticism as well, I never saw them running any hard cuts. They just stand in the corner. The one time I saw Brokoff run a curl cut and he got the shot, he caught it and got the shot off. It missed. But that was the only sort of constructive, positive offensive move I saw from him all night. It was hopeless.
That's the big story from this game. those two scoreless in this game and Glidden scoreless in the series. Didn't play a heck of a lot of minutes, around about an average of 10 or 12 or something, 15 maybe, but scoreless. Andrew Kane, scoreless. Yeah. Like they were invisible. And Brokhoff played big minutes, 25, I'm assuming, around about that number, and Glidden probably 15 as well. So for 40 minutes of basketball between the pair, scoreless. Wow.
And that's meant to be their competitive advantage. Like they're the three-point shooting offensive powerhouse. Like that is their – that's the way they can win games. And they didn't do it. They had Mitch Creek, who was like 1 of 7 or 1 of 8 or something like that. Like Mitch Creek, you're many things, but you're not a dropped knockdown shooter. Like
No. Also, doesn't his shot to me looks like he should be right-handed shooting it? Like it just doesn't come out of his hands cleanly. But anyway, I want to say this as well.
Yep.
Assertiveness. Like if I've got a scale or a pin, you know, like a temperature measurement or whatever, is this an issue of, when I say it, Glidden and Brokhoff's struggles, is their struggles an issue of not used in the offense or lack of assertiveness, lack of aggression on their individual part? Where would you put the needle? Would it lean more towards, which way would it lean, Andrew Kenny?
That's a good question. It's probably a bit of both.
I'll answer it while you think about it. I'll let you have your own. I think it leans more towards lack of their assertiveness. If Mitch Creek can get up 7 3-point attempts in a very free-flowing offense, it's an issue of getting to your spots, demanding the ball, making yourself known. I think they were too. I thought they were passive, and I thought it fell to them. And I'd say that on a scale of 1 to 10. 7/10 lack of aggression, 3/10 not getting the offense. Man, the world's not perfect, okay? The world's not designed for you in mind. You got to make it happen for you, and I thought neither of them did.
Yeah, it's a good point. I'd have to agree. And every time Brokhoff, for instance, did get the ball, he held it for mere milliseconds before passing it on. And the passes weren't constructive. They would just be, I'll kick it back out to the top and reset. Come on, man. Like, just jack it. Like... Who cares, right? Just jack the thing.
And call for a pick. Call for a pick or put your head over the ball and do something. Go at the basket. Maybe it frees yourself up. Maybe get fouled. And he got to the line a little bit. And I still like his game. I'm still kind of like, I don't know what to make of him. But
I think he has been probably like, I want to say almost the biggest bust of the season.
Not Deng Adel? Like, no, dude. Second to Deng Adel, surely. Well, you're saying bigger than Adel? Well, bigger than doing maybe, it, okay.
This is a boomer. This is a guy who's played in multiple world-level tournaments.
Well, he played in the Olympics,
He played in the NBA. He's played in Europe. He's done it all, right? If he can't get a shot up in the NBL, I'm sorry. He came in. He needed to be a dominant piece of their puzzle. And he wasn't.
I thought when he joined, I was like, here we go, lock it down, top three, maybe push the top two. They were a little bit far through the season for that. But are we being too harsh? Did you watch the Mitch Creek press conference afterwards?
I did. Yes, I watched it.
Felt a real personal – I like Simon Mitchell. In fact, I texted him before game two. I said, give him hell. And then they won. And I said, well, you know, before game three, I texted and said, listen, this worked well last time. Good luck, coach. Didn't have the same omen or effect. But the human element here, are we being too hard on Glidden, who's just had a kid and COVID, and Brokhoff, who's had a very turbulent last 6 months with boomers and COVID and Europe and FIBA World Cup dropout and all that sort of stuff? Are we being too harsh from a personal level?
Perhaps we're being a little bit harsh, but at the same time, every single player in the league is dealing with that stuff. Like, you know, Bryce Cotton had
say. We're all – yeah, sorry, I'm interrupting. Sorry, Andrew. Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. Everybody's going through crap, right? And it's not – but it's how you respond to the crap. And their response seemed to be just drop your bundle and not perform. Like, I'm sorry, you're still getting paid.
So, money spent. Money's in the kitty. As much as they'd be like, oh, I didn't play well, they're still like, well, money's still that's what I mean. Whenever I have a bad day at work, I'm like, the money's already spent. I've already taken it. It's in the pocket. But
so
what
I could ramble on about them forever. So we should probably move on from those guys. Highly disappointing. Yep. Do better. Yep. And neither of them should be in the Boomer squad for this coming tournament.
Squad? Team? Squad.
Squad. Get them out. Not interested.
Oh! Andrew Kane cracked the whip. I just want to say quickly, Ben Moore, he had as many fouls as points and rebounds in 18 minutes. He just loved a foul. I never saw his worth. I never, especially against Landau, like that was your chance. Like, oh, Landau, don't foul. Stay on him. Double team him. And didn't do it. I just thought, well, what's the scout if you're not doing that? I just lastly on those guys about the coverage. In with Simon Mitchell on that, they were like, oh, we had our detractors, you know, people who put us down. I was like, who? We're probably the most critical people of the Southeast Melbourne, and we like them, but we just think they've got a few gaps. I was shocked to hear them say, oh, I've got these. And that's where it really came down to me. I was like, the NBL, like, if you think that's a struggle and that's negative press, take a look at the UK papers and like, this is nothing. This league is very supportive. The media is very, very, very supportive. So I was shocked to hear them say that. I was like, if that's what your motivation was, no wonder you lost, because there's not enough. That well is not deep enough to beat Melbourne United to draw from.
Yeah, I presume they're talking about the whole Mitch Creek saga, but I mean, that's self-inflicted. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, that's not. I don't. I if they were referring to that, which I don't think so, but yeah, maybe you're right. I don't. Again, I thought that was pretty tame as well. Like, I mean, if you've seen UK papers, they are brutal. Even if you've seen papers on other facets, political papers are brutal in this country. You know, papers on all sorts of stuff. Celebrity rags are brutal. Sports is pretty tame, especially the NBL.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Melbourne United cop all the heat for being the Kesselman team and like Melbourne. Yes. You know, they're Melbourne, right? I don't feel that Southeast get any of that sort of screw Melbourne, you know, screw the city of Melbourne basketball.
That's
hate.
True.
I feel like they're almost like everybody, them and maybe the Hawks are kind of like everybody's second team. That's my impression.
Them, Cairns and Illawarra. I totally agree.
Yeah. So yeah. It's a weird one.
Let's jump on that game, what it was. We've got, we got a final, but before we do that, let's go back to the Hawks Perth series. The fan, the mysterious fan X who yelled, kill yourself at the game. What was your reaction? What was your reaction to the reaction and response?
Yeah, look, not ideal. And it's frustrating because people love to find a reason to hate Perth fans anyway. Yes. And this just provides more fuel to the fire, that assuming that every person in Perth is like that, which they aren't. Like, there are plenty of normal Perth fans. Yes, there's rabid ones, but it's just a game of numbers, right? The more fans you have, the more.
Yes.
Annoying ones you're going to have at the same time. This guy, look, I don't condone that at all. I think it's horrible.
No, it's wrong. If I can stay at the top, what was said was wrong. Offside, out of bounds, not right. Absolutely. Not on.
I think the Wildcats came out and made a statement, you know, sort of like they went the mental health avenue, you know, bring yourself forward. We'll support you, which I get why they said it, but I actually think it's a little bit weak. I think I would have liked to see more, stronger action taken against that. Like, because the Wildcats for so long have portrayed themselves, and this is like a real family, like they try and promote family friendliness, right? And this has probably tapered off a little bit since Nick Marvin left the club. But there was a period of time, and I don't know if it's still the case, and I don't think it is based on what I'm hearing, is that like there was literally like a no swearing policy in the team. Right.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, wow. It was, you know, front office, coaching, player, like, you did not swear.
Swear jar type stuff.
Yeah, there was. Now, to me, what that fan said is like beyond the pale. If you're trying to establish a culture like that, you can't then allow and condone a fan saying that sort of stuff. I think you've got to say, no, our organization doesn't stand for that. And we're not going to permit you to sit so close, maybe. Maybe they say, we're going to ban you, but you're only allowed in the bronze.
Upper deck.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Like, people are saying banned. Banned for life, over. Do you think that's an overreaction?
I think banned for life is probably an overreaction. Yeah, I think agree. That's where the Wildcats probably stepped in and said, let's go the counselling and give you the support you need kind of approach. But yeah, in this era of, you know, like, you know, Black Lives Matter, just that sort of like awareness around mental health. Greg Hire doing all his work.
Yep.
Like, and at the end of the day, it's a game, right? I'm all for booing the opposition and absolutely ragging them.
I like clever, witty stuff as well, funny. Yep. Like, for example, I everyone was like, oh, Mitch Creek telling Pete Ling, like, we'll see you in game three. And I was like, well, he probably should have turned and said that to Brokoff and Glidden, because they must have, you know, like that, stuff like that to me is witty and funny. But no, this was obviously, this wasn't witty. This wasn't funny. It wasn't clever. This was wrong and bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Having said all that, right, the only one, and I'm not mounting a defensive case for the guy, but I'm just trying to see it from both sides. That's how you get to the truth, is as a fan, you get fired up and sometimes you say some stuff that is stupid and you're trying to be funny and it just doesn't work. And so, you know, maybe there's a bit of that. The guy's fired up. He's trying, he's pumped, he's excited.
Great
and you
point.
Say something stupid and you, as soon as you say it, you're like, I shouldn't have done that. Now, I don't know his motivations, but it's just potentially that could happen.
I want to jump in on that because you made a good point. And it's also because there's more than an issue with just like the fan behavior is an issue on this. Suicide and the take on that now and the important take on that is an issue. But also it's this was picked up on a broadcast microphone, right? People have been complaining about hearing Trevor Gleeson all year, yapping, hearing Gorgon, hearing fans. If you're in the broadcast, you shouldn't have a sound effects microphone picking up the fan. The fan is not media trained like the players are or the coaches. They're encouraged in the stadium, make noise.
Yep.
You know, this microphone has been, you should hear the fans, but not, you should not be able to hear a fan. And I've heard this voice 1,000 times talking.
Right.
And the effects mic is way too close. And that's an issue because if this hadn't been picked up on the broadcast mic, it would have been dealt in house. And then that's the way it probably should have been done. So that's one thing. But also, you know, you talk about family friendly, right? Perth Wildcats, absolutely family friendly. But they sell booze at the game, right? And when you sell booze at something, you're creating an adult environment. Yeah. And in an adult environment with booze, this sort of stuff is going to come up. I mean, that's why there's security at pubs. You cannot sell booze and expect behavior to be pristine. It's just not, you'd prefer it to be that way, but it's not how it goes. So there is this sort of hypocrisy within the whole thing of make noise, but not that kind of noise. And get boozy, but don't get too boozy. And be adult, but we're family. It's like, okay, very difficult to think. And that's why I don't want to say I have sympathy for this guy, but I'm like, you know what? I understand redemption. I understand, a mistake was made. I don't think he meant it in the spirit he meant it. I think he meant it in the spirit of I'm going to say something funny and it didn't quite pan out and people are going at him. So anyway,
the one thing I hate, and this goes beyond basketball, it's the whole like, and I'm slightly guilty of it too, but it's the whole Twitter pile-on culture, you know, like something can get magnified real quick. The internet loves a controversy.
For sure.
Yeah. And it can get, things can escalate pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, the other thing I want to say, I mean, Jock Landau can tell a cameraman to get the fuck out of his face and the cameraman complies pretty promptly, right?
Yeah.
Can a fan say, get that fucking microphone out of my face and they comply? I'm just saying.
It's a good question. Yeah.
Can I say, if I get dragged on court and put on TV, I want a slice of the broadcasting fee. It's my fucking face. I know when you buy a ticket, you sign up to being filmed. I get that. But I'm just making the point.
Yeah.
Let's jump up. Awards. We've done them quickly. We've done that. We did it with body, but we didn't do the first team quite so much. I've got my first and second team, and I just want to see if it ticks all your boxes. The first team, I think, is really concrete and obvious. Mooney, Landau, Creek, Cotton, Harvey.
Yeah, it's...
I've got Creek there. Now, Sobey is the one.
Yeah, that's the one. I would probably swap out if Sobey for Creek, if they can be considered both like outside players.
Yeah.
Is that how they do it?
I would hope so. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I hope I don't subscribe to that shit. But I see your point. And I think you can either have Creek or Sobey. I don't think you can have Creek in either camp. Here's why I put Creek.
Okay.
And they finished fourth. Okay. Finished in the finals. They were a better team. Mitch Creek was their best player.
Yep.
He missed very little time. When Sykes went down, it was him. His numbers are good. His effort was good. He went through, if you want to talk about storyline, he went through all the BS he had to go through, or the struggles, I should say, he had to go through. Played well. Sobey had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
Did have a bit of a dip that wasn't well publicized with the sort of Lamar and a few things. And then also they bumbled out of the finals. They weren't a team of consequence.
Yeah.
Creek was a man, a player of consequence on a team of consequence, and Sobey wasn't. That's my rationale. You still put Sobey in?
Yeah, I think so. I think Sobey just he dominated that team, the Brisbane team, and without him, they would have been in a real world of pain.
That is a good point.
And I think he showed good control on either end of the court. I thought he really took a step up in that regard. I just like what he brought to the table a little bit more. But look, it's line ball.
It's hard
to make an argument because they're so comparable, those two guys, in the way that they perform, not in terms of the way they play. I don't know. There's just something. Yeah. Sobey caught the eye. Sobey caught the eye a little bit more. I think Mitch Creek was sometimes a bit too passive. Whereas Sobey,
you
could never accuse him of being passive.
Funnily enough, Creek's slump actually coincided with when the charges were dropped.
Yes, they did. Yeah,
which is interesting. Second team, happy to jump on.
Yep.
Here's who I've got: Daniel Johnson, Cam Oliver, who I initially said shouldn't be in there, but I looked at how many games he missed. I put him in. Johnson, Oliver, Delaney, Sobey, and Casper Ware. That's my second team.
Okay. Right now,
This
is where I'm afraid I haven't done any research, right? I haven't done any prep. You got no space for Jarrell Martin?
Missed too much time.
Okay.
He missed a lot of games and was on minutes restrictions. He just didn't, the number of minutes. And while you're still thinking, I'm going to look at how many minutes and games he played.
Yep.
I think you'll be surprised. But yeah, you're okay with all the others?
I'm not sure I am.
Oh. Okay,
I'm thinking this through. Okay, I'm just give me another minute. Give me another minute. Time. Who have you got? Tell me who you got again.
Daniel Johnson of the Adelaide 36ers, Cam Oliver of the Cairns Taipans, Finn Delaney of the Breakers, Nathan Sobey of the Bullets, and Casper Ware of the Sydney Kings.
Okay. Now I'm going to throw some alternatives at you, right?
Do indeed.
This is not necessarily my final, but I'm a man in contemplation. Okay. Sykes.
Missed too much time.
Okay.
So I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I mean.
Okay. Because he might be my swap out for Casper. But fair point. I'll keep Casper in and I'll ditch Sykes just because of time, not because of actual performance, right?
Oh, actually, I'm looking at it here. Cam Oliver played 24 games.
Yeah, I don't have Oliver in there.
I thought I saw somewhere he had 31.
Right. No, I don't think he makes it.
I've misread that. Yeah,
so
sorry, go on.
So then I've got another question mark around Giddy. The guy was at, say what you will about him, but he put up numbers and he got a number of triple doubles. He did well. He did a good job with that team, especially when Humphreys was playing. I think you might need to have Giddy in there.
No, I this is one I'm quite firm on. I'm definitely Oliver. Let me tell you, I'm shaken. I've made a mistake there. I'm solid on Daniel Johnson. Solid on him. Big minutes, big production, good player. Finn Delaney, solid. Those two are locks for me. And then Sobey or Creek, depending on where you're at with that. I'm pretty solid on those.
Yep.
Casper, I'm also solid on. I thought they were the fifth place team. If you took him off that team, they're bad.
Yeah,
they win half the number of games they do. I thought he was right up there with the best defenders in the league. Not a flashy defender, but led that team in a true import point guard style. I mean, Scott Machado lost his bundle this year and didn't get Cairns to where they were. I thought Casper Ware, I just thought you knew when he was in the game that they were going to play well and the right guys were going to catch it at the right time and did overshoot late in games. And then a rookie coach. No, I'm very solid on Casper Ware. And why I'm down on Giddy is, yep, great stats. You make a great point. But, man, they were the second worst. They weren't a team of consequence. For half the year, I didn't tune into their games because it wasn't worth it. I knew the only highlight out of this game will be Giddy's stats and I can just see them in a post. Giddy, 12 points, 8 rebounds, 10 assists. I that was all that was going to happen because I certainly weren't going to win with him there.
Okay. All right.
Cam Oliver is the one. All right, let's take him out because he only played 24 games. I thought he played more than that.
Yep.
Who gets his place?
Right. So I contemplated Justin Simon.
Me too. Yeah.
But ultimately I haven't gone with him.
Okay.
Right. So this is my note. This has been a good time to workshop. Like listening to you, I've come down to my final five now.
Good man.
Second team. Okay, so I'll run you through them and then we can compare. So I've got Casper Ware, convinced me of that. I've got Giddy, keeping him in. They're my two, they're my two guards, right?
Okay.
And then I've got DJ, I've got Finn Delaney, and I've got Mitch Creek.
That's a pretty neat team. And then you've obviously got Sobey in the first.
Yes, yeah, that's the swap out there. Yeah.
It's quite neat, isn't it?
So,
yeah, I like that better.
That was easy.
Well, Creek, I like Creek in that first team, though. I do. I mean, they were the fourth best team, and he was their best player, whereas Sobey was the best player on a team that, you know.
Yeah.
Did Sobey really influence? He was so much to that team, but did he influence winning as much as Mitch Creek? Mitch Creek had Tarangi, Glidden, and Brokoff sucking up 30 minutes, 120 minutes of the game, man.
No,
then Ben Moore struggling like a mother, and then Wetzel, who was a rookie, and
yeah.
No, I want Creek in that first team. All right. I'm making the case for it.
Okay,
but I do like yours is very neat. Let's say Sobey's. Replace Cam Oliver for me. If in my team, I like your team. I think you've got a great thing. Who are we putting in Cam Oliver's place?
I need an inside player, right?
Jeez. Yeah, you do. Well, unless you move. Flip.
See, if.
Unless you go with Johnson, Delaney, McCarron, Sobey, and Ware.
I'm not putting McCarron in.
I didn't think so. Oh, good defense. No.
We need another forward.
Todd Blanchfield.
Yeah.
Justin Simon's probably the guy, but oh gee, I don't feel comfortable with that either.
We're short one, big man. That's it's pickings are slim, aren't they?
We're just gonna have to move on and leave
Jarrell Martin. There you go.
Okay, Jarrell Martin, he had a good year. Yeah, why not? I'm it's so neat to just have Sobey in the first team and Creek slide down. Maybe that's what's gonna happen. Anyway, let's jump on because we're going around in circles. But Executive of the Year is an award that we didn't do with Boddy. Who wins that? Is it Tommy Greer? Is it Dory Kadahi?
It is Dory Kadahi. Yes, yeah, it is. But I'm just thinking, like, who's the Melbourne dude again?
Oh, Vince Crivelli.
Vince Crivelli. Yeah, there you go. There's the actual.
Well, you know, I think there's certainly a case for Troy Georgiou in Perth.
Do you think so?
Man, I don't. If he went to the board meeting and said, "Hello, everyone, I would like to apply for Executive of the Year," and they said, "Okay, Troy, what have you got for us?" So yeah, I brought John Mooney to the league, the best big man import in a long time.
Oh yeah, that guy that you should have signed as a next star, then gotten another import. So when Ross Cotton got injured, good move. Like no,
yeah, fair play, fair, good answer. All right, and then I think you know Tommy Greer would say that simple thing of. Second year team, we're in the finals, but at the end of the day, with my answer back to Tommy would be, Mr. Greer would be your team finished 50-50. Your record is after those two losses in the final, you're a 50-50 team, and that's good, but it's not great. It's not Executive of the Year. Thank you very much. And
Ben Moore was promised all year that he would improve and would do amazing things and never did.
Loved a foul, and committed fouls that were worthwhile and value for money fouls, but fouls nonetheless.
No.
That's the only award of media coverage. Who's gonna win that? I don't know. They used to do a podcast of the year, and I think Trash Talk won it. I'd say maybe Brad and Boddy are in with a chance. You know, a few others.
Now, Tudor and Horn, NBL Pocket Podcast. This is where you come for the real stuff. Come on.
I think it'd be a pleasure to be nominated, but I'm not. Hold my breath.
I don't think we have friends in high enough places, unfortunately.
No, I don't think we have friends anywhere, but well, we're friendly, I guess. Let's jump on. Grand final. Let's do it.
All right.
Perth, Melbourne. How are you, first of all, are you kind of deflated? Like, oh, here we go. Perth and Melbourne. Big spenders.
Why did we bother having a season? Because we all said, well, actually we didn't, did we? Because Perth was predicted to fail. Well,
some of us did, but go on.
But no, it's the grand final kind of everybody thought would ultimately happen. It has happened. So that's good, I guess. Yeah, the big spending teams, they are. But, you know, they've got the best players as well. So if you want the best in the final, that's true.
I want to ask you this question. Who will win?
Melbourne.
in any doubt, like in a sweep? Or?
Nah, not a sweep. Maybe four. I think four. Okay. I think.
Why do you say that?
I think they might lose the one of the first two games. They'll lose probably the first game, because I'll be there.
Courtside, no less. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to thank a friend for that one. Yeah, but I think Melbourne have got it tough. They finished later than the Wildcats, so one less day's rest, and they've got to travel over here. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a tough ask to win that first one. The thing that gets me is I don't know if you noticed I did see the end of the game, like when Melbourne won, they seemed super pumped to be in the grand final.
Super.
The Wildcats sort of went box checked. Mm-hmm. Let's do cooldowns. And it was just a kind of an interesting dynamic. And maybe it's probably
dichotomy,
really
yeah.
way too much into it, but it was almost like, right now Wildcats were like, all right, now we've got business to attend to. Melbourne are like, yeah, we showed them. Ha ha. You know, like, just interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And it wasn't lost on me either. And that's why I say I think the Wildcats win this in four. And here's why I make the case. Here's my long case. Because I feel I have to make the case because it's not the modern convention. And that's exactly right. The Melbourne United are stepping up to the Wildcats, right? This is the Wildcats League. They've won two in a row. Much as they didn't finish on top, doesn't matter. When you want to beat the Wildcats, they are the master and you are the apprentice, right? So I look at Wildcat basketball, right? Everyone goes, what is Wildcat basketball? And they talk about the club and the culture. No. I distill it to more of a nuts and bolts type thing. It's rebounds, it's offensive rebounds, and it's the lack of turnovers and the home court advantage, right? They are the four things that win the Wildcats game. And they have won the Wildcats games for about 10 years, plus Bryce Cotton. Now, Bryce Cotton's a huge loss, not going to lie. But, you know, so's an underperforming Scotty Hobson and an empty second import slot for Melbourne United. So I keep coming back to those things. Rebounds, offensive rebounds, and turnovers. It's what won Perth the Illawarra series, and I think it'll want to win them the series against Melbourne United, as well as home court. So, case for the Wildcats.
Okay.
They get the first two games at home.
Huge.
There's a huge, plus with the travel, as you just said, there's a reason the NBA changed its format from 2-3-1-1 a couple of years ago when the Heat won with Shaq and Dwayne Wade. They shouldn't have won that series. Dallas won their first two, and then the three in the middle. It gives an advantage, but in the other way, in a five-game series, I think that it's a huge advantage for the Wildcats to have those first two up top.
Yep,
massive.
No doubt.
But Perth get a slightly longer break. You spoke about that. Man, Trevor Gleeson's a better coach than Vickerman.
Mm-hmm.
Gleeson will not play lineups that aren't working for longer than a millisecond than they need to be. Dean Vickerman will sit in lineups that don't work. And in a five-game series and in a single game that needs to be won, that'll kill you. And it almost killed him against Southeast Melbourne, taking Golding out at a critical moment. If Southeast Melbourne had a little bit more command of their faculties, that game could have been different.
Yep.
And I think that the Wildcats, the turnovers they committed were elevated against Illawarra because of Simon, Justin Simon. And Justin Simon is an entity to himself. He's a defensive freak. As much as Illy and McCarron are good, they're not like him. They're not 6'6", super long arms. They're nuggety, you know, physical guys, but they're not that domineering, hands out wide presence. And I think that was more the reason for the turnovers from the Wildcats than an ineptitude on the part of Kevin White or Norton. I thought he was just, you know, they did that classic Scottie Pippen on Magic Johnson in the 91 NBA Finals.
Oh, nice reference.
Thank you. He's just so long and wiry, it's hard to even make a pass around him, let alone try and dribble around him. I know I'm talking a lot, but I'm going to keep going. The regular season between Perth and Melbourne went 3-2 in favour of Melbourne. Amazingly, Melbourne went 2 wins, 0 losses at RAC Arena. I couldn't believe it. And I look at these games, and I'm not even looking at the result, but in the first game in Bendigo that Melbourne won, Perth still won the offensive rebounds, the rebounds, but not the turnover battle. In the second game in a Perth win, Perth won only the turnover battle. In another win at John Cain Arena, Perth won all three categories. So, and then the next game, Perth win the offensive rebounds, the rebounds, and parity in turnovers. Perth win. So what I'm getting at is most of the time, Perth were able to get a command of Wildcat basketball. Offensive rebounds, turnovers. And Melbourne just seemed to really throw the ball around against Perth. I think the pressure really bothered them. Their turnovers are way high. You know, turnovers in the high teens against Perth routinely. And I think the Wildcats can replicate that, especially at home. Cotton hasn't played since the 21st of the 5th, and the Wildcast are 4-3 without him, losing to Illawarra twice and Melbourne. The Wildcats score about 75 points per game without Cotton. Is that enough?
That's my worry.
Oh, it's a huge worry. Now I've said all that crap, you jump in.
All right, so I make the case for Melbourne. So as much as I agree with sort of everything you've been saying, I think Wildcats don't have the ability to score enough points to go with Melbourne. Defense is really super important, and Southeast Melbourne showed you can keep Melbourne down to a relatively low score, but I think over a 5-game series, they just have too many offensive options. Like I said on Twitter earlier, they're like whack-a-mole. You know, you knock yep. one guy down, another one pops up. Yeah, you have a Scotty Hobson who's done nothing all season, then he goes for 20 points or something. You know, Chris Golding will get hot. He will get hot at some point in this series. And he'll go whack, whack. And what do you do? So I just worry that the Wildcats don't have the ability to go with Melbourne and score points, because Perth have these dry runs, right? Where they just can't get the ball in the basket. And they run hot and cold hugely. And they don't have a reliable go-to option anymore. So I just think that's the biggest problem they face. They will play defense like crazy. They will show effort. They will do all the little things. But I think ultimately the ability to score is still important. And that's their big gap now.
Here's what I'll say. And I agree with the whack-a-mole thing. But I think there are certain moles. There are only a couple of moles. Jock Landau's a mole. A damn big one. And I dare say the mole. He's king mole. Golding is a mole.
Yep,
Golding's definitely a mole. Hobson can be a mole. Not all the time. Sometimes he's sort of a ferret, but more often than not, he's a mole. I don't see any other moles. I said it. I don't. JLA, I think, is clumsy. I think you can force him into stuff. Peatling doesn't scare me. McDaniel. If McDaniel wants to shoot it 10 times in a game, you go ahead. You go ahead. We'll win that game. Thank you very much. That's no mole. Barber's either hurt. Why do you only get 9 minutes in that game?
That was confusing, that one.
Mm. Has he fallen out of favor?
No, I think I see every Melbourne player as a mole. They just seem to all pop up. And Mitch McCarron, like
David Barlow's a mole. He's going to
He's the most annoying mole ever. He's so annoying.
He'll pop up
and hit threes. It's so frustrating because that shot should not ever work. And it does reliably.
But is he going to be a mole over 40 minutes? There are 200 minutes of basketball that matter now. Is he going to be a mole that whole time? That's where I'm like, in Perth? Are you going to be in Perth? Oh, dear. Okay. Also, here's all my other things I want to say. I wish Litton Cotton won't play at all. Just saying.
He won't play. He's just done. Saying. He's done. He's cooked.
Just saying. Frustrate dear JLA, especially on defense. If you can make him look silly on defense, Vickerman will drag him. And you talk about not being able to score enough points. You take JLA off that court and Melbourne United's point tally's come down by 10, 15.
Yep.
Nothing open for CG43. I cannot do it. Even after a Landau double team, come off everybody else, not him.
Yep.
Can't do it.
Yep.
Fouls permitting, a little bit more White and Norton together. Limit turnovers, especially late in the game. If there's pressure, I felt that one of them, maybe it was a Justin Simon factor, but I saw a lot of turnovers in the fourth quarter I wasn't comfortable with from the Wildcats. Pressure Ilya McCarron into turnovers. As much as they've had a good year, they will turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a Casper Ware, they're not a Bryce Cotton, they're not a real solid in-point. They will turn the ball over. Make Golding put it on the deck. The missed dunk, the jerky steps attacking the hoop in game three, I'm not convinced he's got more than that one dimension.
Yeah.
And that's been the knock on him for a while, so I don't think I'm speaking out of school. Let Vickerman play his wacky and, dare I say it, kind of nepotistic lineups and strategies. Yikes. Okay. Don't shoot me. But
nepotistic.
McDaniel taking shots that I thought someone's got to go, no. Do you see who's on the floor around you? You don't take those shots. Thank you very much. That this early in the shot clock. Nah, not you. And I thought he was given too much rein. And you know, that'll shoot you out of the game. But
I think
here's the thing. Oh, you go.
No, you carry on.
Last thing I'm going to say is I think the depth is overrated. I think there are 200 minutes of basketball that matter now, and they're broken down to 40-minute increments. Depth helps you through the season, but you want guys who you know. And to me, with the depth, it's like Spider-Man, Green Goblin and Spider-Man. The cunning warrior attacks neither body nor mind. His heart, Andrew Kenyon, his heart, okay? And Jock Landale is the heart. You got the doubling, yeah. The banging, the flopping, the non-verbal mind games that Landale is going to face are going to be borderline criminal. It's going to be the sporting equivalent of the Ludovico technique from A Clockwork Orange. He is going to have to be mentally tough beyond. Yep. He loves a yap. He loves a talk. And he will commit fouls. We saw it in this series. I've said too much.
If ever there's a time for Will Magnay to earn his paycheck, this is the reason they got him into the team, right?
Absolutely.
This is where he needs to stand up. He's shown nothing so far.
Nothing.
This is his opportunity. It's a fair, reasonable matchup. It's not a funky lineup that he's going to have to be facing. Nope. It's a center versus a center. Like, this is your time to shine, Will Magnay.
He can cover Landale. He can't stop Landale. Landale was absolutely terrific in that game, whatever it was, three. I thought he was superlative. But there's no excuse for Magnay. You got the ups. You got the size. You're a little bit gangly. Landale is certainly stronger. You can cover him on the perimeter. Magnay, I'd pose this question to him. Are you good enough to stay on the floor as a big guy in one of Trevor Gleason's last 5 minutes in on his teams, which no big guy's done. Yep. Even Miles Plumlee, who was getting millions of dollars, he couldn't stay on the floor. Are you going to be able to do it, Magnay? So it's going to be a good series for those reasons. Yeah.
Magnay needs to put away the flippers that he's currently using for hands and replace them for actual hands, and then be aggressive at the rim. Like the amount of times I've seen him sort of throw pump fakes and stuff, it's like, dude, just go up. Like, don't worry.
I haven't seen him dunk the ball this year yet.
No, I think he's had one or maybe two. But
he needs to dunk on. He needs to dunk it, and then occasionally and give Landale that little pop out and, oh, you're not going to come? Boom. Hit the three. Drag Landale from the hoop. Landale is this team. When he fouled out against Southeast Melbourne, Melbourne looked really dreadful. Really dreadful. Yeah. And got absolutely whipped. So they've got to either force him off the floor or negate him on the floor somewhat. Tough ask, but I think the Wildcats are going to do it.
Well, you're more hopeful than I am, but I'm looking forward to a good series.
I'm not confident, but I've got some courage to say what I think. And if any Melbourne fans are like, oh, God, you two are Perth, I tag the bet. I'll tag a pretty meaty bet, money-wise, nudity in public, whatever it is. I'll take it. I'll wear it, but I'm not holding my breath.
All right. Now, we got a question. We got a question from
a fan. Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's do the question and then we're out of here. Okay. Anonymous question. Quite lengthy, pardon me. Here we go. A couple of weeks ago, the NBA and Hennessy did a promotional gig at Bondi Beach, emptied the pool, installed a court, and did some activation to promote the league's official liquor. It was cool, outside the box, and a great piece of content. Oddly enough, they did this with a tennis player. Now, I love Nick Kyrgios. I think Australia needs more sports stars like him, and he's a great ambassador for basketball and its culture. But is it not odd that there was no NBL involvement at all? Not even league poster boy CG43. Okay, Homicide was there, but what does it say when there's a massive marketing promotion of basketball in this country and we, brackets or parentheses, the NBL universe, do not have an active player in the league in attendance? Are NBL players not exciting enough or outspoken enough? Also, if Kyrgios is good enough for the NBA, why hasn't the NBL jumped on him to be a league ambassador of sorts or get him as a host on Overtime? If Andrew Gaze can do a footy show, surely Nick can be on something NBL related. The NBL also missed the boat on Ronnie Cheng, who I had to Google is a comedian, who was a massive basketball fan and is now a significant international personality and was Melbourne based. For the league to continue to grow in the mainstream, it needs some star power. Finally, a question. If the NBA's official liquor is Hennessy, what do you think the NBL's official liquor should be? Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, Johnny Walker, Smirnoff, a vodka cruiser, a goon bag? I'll let you and Andrew discuss. That is the question. Let's go to the Hennessy thing. All right. It was interesting not to see many NBL people there. And I think Homicide was there in his capacity with sort of NBA Australia.
Right.
You go, Andrew. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw the promotion. It did look cool having that pool drained out. I think it's probably a result of it being a international campaign. So Hennessy will want global awareness of that. Like, that's something that goes around the world. So the connections, you see now, Kyrgios, tennis is a global sport. So that would make sense. I actually hate Kyrgios, so I'm on the other foot there.
I'm leaning that way. Yeah, I'm ambivalent to dislike. Yep.
But also think about it. So that's in Sydney. So they would just, from a promotional sort of booking point of view, I think they'd just try and find a Sydney person, especially
that's exactly
these times. Like trying. So who in Sydney is a name player? Like, we're going to bring up Brad Newley or something. Like, he's not really gonna, he's not striking the Hennessy sort of target market or anything like that. I don't think he fits. So I just don't think there's, and from a global point of view, people don't know or care about the NBL. So
I agree with all this.
So I think that's why you have that problem.
Yeah, I agree. And I think first and foremost, I always think logistically about this stuff. It was hosted in Sydney and the NBL is less than nothing here. The Kings are not a presence, you know, and I don't know where this person's writing from, but you know, if you're in, say, a Perth, you know, the Wildcats are a presence. In Sydney, it's who Sydney Kings who. So, yeah, I think more logistically, you're totally right. Like, in COVID times, you have to get someone from Sydney and there isn't any. And that's the brutal fact. If you're in Melbourne, you've kind of got a few more options, Homer Ben Simmons or whatever. Maybe there's more. I don't know. Don't live in Melbourne.
Yep.
So that is the number one there. And I think also, Kyrgios, as much as he's an NBA, as a basketball fan, he's an NBA fan. He's a Boston Celtics fan.
Yeah.
He's just not an NBL fan. And I think the NBL really, it needs to align itself or at least be friendly with the NBA, but it also has to be its own product. And that's, and I think at a point, the NBL kind of has to say to itself, listen, we're not a high-end product. We're not the NBA. We're not Premier League soccer. Not going to happen. Not in our DNA. Your DNA is in the grassroots. And you know, community engagement. And that's not Hennessy at Bondi Icebergs. That's, and this might sound really degrading, but you know, that's a Lamington sale at you know, Lidcombe Primary. I'm brutal. You know, and you start at the very, and you ever had a problem with the Lamington sale? I'm not above that. I'll go to the opening of a letter. You know, so there's no shame in doing that. And that's where you build your sport. But that's where it is right now. It's primary schools, it's supermarkets, it's not Bondi Icebergs. That's Kardashian stuff, and that's a ways away, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But also, the final question was a drink of the NBL. Does the NBL have one? Because that's so important if it doesn't. Like, the AFL's got Carlton Draft, and
I don't think it does. It's got Harry Jackson Bunnings. And what's that? And the ad with Aaron Phillips. The protein thing.
Masashi or something. You know, and that's really interesting.
We should know it by now. We've heard that bloody ad so many times.
Oh, God. The other thing I'll say, it's so true, because I would have thought, it's interesting that Bunnings sponsors the league, because that's not something at all relatable. You know, you can't enjoy a Bunnings product, except maybe a sausage sizzle at the game. But, you know, like a beer, like, you can drink that at the game. You can actively consume it right then, right there, and when you're watching it. You can't be knocking up a set of shelves as you're watching the grand final from Bunnings. Or Hungry Jack's, I suppose, at home you can, but you can't buy that in the arena. But, yeah, the fact that they haven't got a beer sponsor, which have been a real linchpin of a lot of teams in the league.
Yeah.
Swan Gold, Wildcats, West End in Adelaide. You know, beer and sports, I don't know if you noticed, they kind of go together pretty well.
Yes.
So that is surprising. And I say beer, but I mean alcohol. Yeah.
What I would maybe go with, if I was going to say the NBL has to have an alcohol drink partner, I would say it needs to be a beer, and probably, you know, just like one of the mainstream everyday beers like VB or, you know, Carlton Draft or something that you can get everywhere and that is inoffensive and kind of just mainstream. I think that's what they need to go for. But if you wanted a beverage, I think they would work well with Red Bull.
Oh. Or Monster, or an energy drink of I understand.
Yeah. Now I know they've got Gatorade. That's what they've probably got at the moment, right? They've always got the Gatorades.
Oh, don't bring up Gatorade. That's apparently unprofessional. Don't do that.
What flavor do you like?
Well,
what's your flavor? But No, I think maybe. Okay, it's a Gatorade. Probably they probably can't do it because it's Gatorade. But if I would, I would do something like Red Bull. Like they're kind of good at those big event marketing. They've got huge marketing like budget. Gives you wings. You could tie that in with, you know, flying and basketball. You know, jumping through
speaks
the air.
Speaks to the crowd as well. Like, let's face it. I think if you looked at the demographic of the NBA, it'd be sort of middle class, working lower middle.
Yep.
And yeah, something that aligns with that. You know, you're not having a glass of champagne at the NBL. I don't think that's the crowd. I don't. If you're chasing that, I think you're a little bit strange or deluded. That's not the issue. Yep. So yeah, I think something. I think Monster drink or energy drink, one of those would be a good pairing. But Gatorade's probably got the corner on it now. I think it definitely does.
Yeah.
That is as best as we can answer that question or a topic. But you know, I hope people at home have had to think about it. And that's really where we're at. We got Melbourne winning it. We got Perth winning it. It'd be very, very interesting to see what's going to happen. Be a good series.
I'm looking forward to it. And there's no rest. You know, it's like straight into it. Like this has been after a hugely long season. We're bang straight into the grand final. Like, wow.
Yeah, two games in Perth. I think that's critical. Anyway, we've made the points. We're just under an hour. We thought we'd go for half, but these things happen. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Patreon. Rate and review on Apple Apple, what is it? Podcast? Yeah, why not? Do that. Send us a kind word. Twitter, we're on there. You'll find us.
Yeah.
Andrew Kennedy, you got the last word.
Bye.